The men and women that put on the blue police uniform are nothing if not highly trained observers. So when they see an unidentified flying object, shouldn't we stand up and take notice? When Coast to Coast returns, the editor of UFO Truth magazine, retired British police detective, Gary Heseltine. Stay with us. Gary Heseltine is a retired British police detective with over 22 years service. And in 2002, he founded the PRUFOS, Police Reporting UFO Sightings Database, which caters to serving and retired British police UFO sighting reports. In 16 years of research, he has now amassed over 425 cases involving over 900 British police officers. Gary was the former editor of the online publication UFOMonthly.com, as well as the former co-editor of UFO Data Magazine. In Washington, D.C. in 2010, he was awarded the Disclosure Award by Steve Bassett's PRG Group. He is now working on a film about Britain's most famous UFO case, the Rendlesham Forest incident in December 1980. Gary Heseltine, welcome to Coast AM. How are you?
I'm fine, Richard. Thank you for having me as a guest.
My pleasure, and thanks for getting up so early. My word, you really put it all on the line. You had quite a career as a police detective. And, I mean, did you take early retirement to pursue your interest in UFOs, or were you pretty much done with the service?
No, I could have gone on for another 6 years, but by 2013, I'd done nearly 24 years in the police, 19 years as a detective, and by that time, I felt so compelled to move into the UFO field full-time that I took a leap of faith, shall we say. Not that I'm religious, but I took a leap of faith backed by my wife, and we made the decision, yeah, let's go for it. I created an online magazine, a bi-monthly magazine called UFO Truth Magazine, which is 96 pages and features many of the top researchers in the world, Stanton Freeth, Richard Dolan, they've all appeared, Steve Bassett. And it goes out every 2 months, and we've done, since 2013, 34 issues, and the next issue is out at the end of February.
I don't want to belabor the point, but by leaving early, did you take a hit on your pension?
Of course, yes. The average or the usual length of a full-term police pension in the UK is what's called 30 years to get your maximum pension. Now, I had just 3 months short of 24 years. However, because I'd served for 6 years in the Royal Air Force as a police officer, I was able to effectively buy a number of years and transfer my pension. So in the pension pot, I had just under 27 years. So it wasn't that big a hit, but certainly, yes, I did lose some money to follow my passion.
When you started this database, how did you get the word out to your fellow brothers and sisters in the police forces across Britain that you wanted their stories?
I was very lucky, and I'm sure you've interviewed many guests who will say that there's been many strange coincidences, a word that I had never heard of until I got into the active UFO field was the word synchronicity. But I'm sure it's a common word that people use all the time in this field. And certainly for me, there were many synchronicities that I now look back and think that's more than a coincidence. But cutting a long story short, where I worked was in a big city called Leeds. I think Britain's fifth or sixth biggest city. And believe it or not, the editor of a printed magazine called UFO Magazine, with the editor of a guy called Graham Birdsall, who sadly passed away in 2003 at only the age, I think, 49, and a tragic loss for British ufology. His office, believe it or not, could have been anywhere in the UK, but it was 11 miles away from where I worked. So that was just too good an opportunity, and in the 2 years before he died, which was September 2003, I'd got to know him. I'd started calling him, and basically, I'd originally contacted him over a UFO screenplay that I delivered one Sunday afternoon when the office was closed. And that started our friendship. Over time, I got to know him pretty well in that last 2 years of his life. And when I had the idea for the Pre-Force Police database, he was somebody I could approach and say, look, I've had this idea to create a database for British UFO reports. Would you let me publish in your magazine? Now, at that time, I'd never published anything in any magazine anywhere, so this was a massive thrill to be in a publication that you could go into any big news agent and there it is up on the shelf. So he liked the idea immediately because he liked the idea that I was a still-serving detective, which he thought added credibility to the subject, and that is, in a sense, why I became involved in the first place, to try to bring something of my background to the credibility angle to ufology. So he said, yep, okay, write your article. So in January 2002, I wrote my very first article anywhere, and it was published, and that was a massive thrill, and is still a highlight of my life, one of my highlights.
425 cases, over 425 cases in 16 years.
Well, I'm gonna shoot your messenger as the researcher. I sent you a new bio because those figures are out of date. The current total is over 550 cases, going back to 1901, believe it or not, involving over 1,100 British police officers. So a significant change to the 900 that you mentioned, but... never mind.
Well, my point is, though, that one might say, you know, that doesn't seem like a whole lot. I'm wondering how much of that has to do with the fact that the underreporting, because I'm guessing the fraternity likes to close ranks and they might not look kindly on police men and women talking to you about this sort of thing.
Oh, absolutely. And the two biggest reasons why police officers or any, shall I say, professional person worldwide doesn't come forward is that is one, a perceived risk to their career if they do, and two, the ridicule effect that is attached to this subject, obviously caused by the Robertson panel decision in 1953. But those are the prime reasons, and over the years of doing research, I've had newspaper people, I've had architects, doctors, all tell me their own UFO stories, but all say I could never go public with this because it would affect my practice, my business, etc. And I always kind of think that the Robertson panel legacy, which has worked tremendously well from the debunking side of things, it has worked tremendously well, has left a terrible stigma on genuine people who have seen things and genuinely wanted to report them, but then were faced with this ridicule factor that should have never been heaped on them historically, but it's now become all pervasive, certainly in the United States, Europe, etc., and has had a very detrimental effect. But, you know, when we talk about 1,100 police officers for a country of 65 million, it's not a lot, but the Pre-Force Police database is the only database in the world of any country that stores police sightings and accounts. And like in America, the size of America, it's the tip of an iceberg, and I know of many American cases. But I would think, given the population, there must be 10,000 cases out there. But it's never been done, which is a shame, because the idea of a police database in every country would be good. Like, it would be great to have a pilot database, a military sighting database in every country. And I think if we'd, in a sense, could go back and rewrite the last 60 years or 70 years of UFO research worldwide, if we'd had people to take those initiatives in each of those areas to establish them, I think we'd be much further on proving to the world that UFOs are real and ET is visiting the Earth, which I certainly believe.
The debunkers, the skeptics say, well, we make too much of this claim that police and airline pilots are trained observers. Disabuse the skeptics and the debunkers of that, that we make too much of this idea that they're trained observers.
Well, I totally disagree with that. And the Battelle Institute report, special report number 14, Blue Book special report number 14, which featured the research of the Battelle Institute, I think 54, 55, basically said that the higher the quality of the reporter, i.e. the better qualified witness, especially like pilots, the more accurate the report was. Are people infallible? Yes, of course they are. But, you know, pilots for me have always been my favourite cases on this subject because with all their millions of dollars and pounds spent on their flight training, if they don't know what they're looking at, especially if it's multiple pilots, which is often the case, then there is something wrong, especially if it's confirmed on ground radar, airborne radar. Now, police officers are not as high as that, I don't think. However, they do have a way of reporting things, and that is based, certainly in Britain, which is obviously what I can talk about, you are taught to go to anything and essentially begin to analyse it and write what you see up in a chronological, logical way. And you do that because it is written up for court. Your statement is going to... People don't write their own statements in England. A police officer asks questions, they get an account, they write it down, they ask if there's any alterations, omissions or whatever to get it right, and then it's read back, it's signed off. So it's done in a certain structured way for the court system. And police officers know that. So they know that when they go into any kind of scene, and I would say whether it be UFO or anything, in the back of their mind, they're making a mental note of the time. They're making a mental note of their surroundings. And when they write that account up, it will be much more detailed than the average member of the public. So I totally disagree with the skeptic notion. And the skeptic notion only gets airtime because, in a sense, the media, the mainstream media, give them the opportunity to do so. And that's, again, a legacy of the Robertson panel. We'll work with any form of media to debunk the subject. So if we really didn't have that all of these years, it would have been a far different world. So that's really where the skeptic gets the opportunity to make these ludicrous claims that actually are rarely ever challenged by mainstream commentators, simply because the mainstream anchorman, anchorwoman, doesn't have the necessary knowledge on UFOs and facts and figures and history to actually become the referee to say, oh, actually, that doesn't make sense because of the Battelle Institute, blah, blah, blah. They don't have that knowledge. I think this will turn in time as we move closer to a genuine acknowledgement that ET is here.
With over 500 cases, is there one that still leaves you, to steal a British expression, gobsmacked?
There's many cases. I mean, we're talking, these are not just single officers. I think at the last count, about 68% of all those 550 cases are multiple police witness cases, i.e. two or more. There are many cases which are two, five, six, eight. In one case, there's 24 officers involved, many looking at objects from different geographical positions and tracking it over vast distances. So I have a personal favourite, and it belonged to a policeman, a uniformed policeman called Eric Raymond, and it's a story that I sometimes quote when I'm asked for a favourite. And basically, this happened, I think, in 1979. He's in a rural area, and probably about 60 miles away from city centre of London, a rural area, and he's parked up with two other vehicles and two other police officers. So basically three police cars, three police officers, and they are doing what they do at 3 a.m. and just having a chat. And then suddenly on the horizon, a long way away on the horizon, they see a flash. They look, but it's so brief, they don't pay really any attention to it. They carry on talking. Then about 5 minutes later, and this is always the thing that if you can imagine this in your head, an object suddenly appears in front of them at an altitude of only 500 feet, about 500 feet away from them. So therefore, in a rural setting, this is extremely close. And it's the size of a football field. And it is scanning the terrain with a beam of light moving left to right. Now, the key thing with this is they don't see the object approach. There is no noise whatsoever. It's a massive platform. And the object just, like it's switching on a light bulb, suddenly appears. Now, can you imagine that you're there in a rural setting, talking away, and then suddenly light bulb, this huge object the size of a football field, is there. They're all amazed, as you would be. Nobody's talking. One of them thinks, should I report it? And then thinks, no, I don't think I should, because they're going to ridicule us. And they watch this object for several minutes, scanning the terrain in total silence, very, very close to their position. Now, what's even more amazing, Eric says that there were around six smaller objects flying around the large object, akin to a mothership type of scenario. And basically, they watched this object incredulous, as you would be, and then suddenly, like a light bulb, gone. Totally gone, doesn't go left, doesn't go right, doesn't go up, no noise, just disappears. And I think the duration was about 4 minutes. So in those circumstances, I always think I can kind of, you know, with special effects now that we see all the time, you can just imagine how that would look on screen there, that this object suddenly, this huge object suddenly appears very close to that position. And I think that's always been probably my favorite case.
To me, what makes the police eyewitness accounts so compelling, so credible, is, well, one, as you've mentioned, that they do this at great peril to their careers. And secondly, you know, imagine at the end of a shift, if you make the decision, if they make the decision they're going to report this, they're looking at several hours of paperwork, I'm guessing.
Well, you would think that if the police force dealt with the subject seriously, but historically, certainly in England, Scotland, Wales, every small town, village had a little police station with a number of police officers. And this was long before the big police stations, the regional police stations. Those type of small police stations have gone. It's a totally different world now.
Gary, I got to jump in here. Excuse the interruption. We'll take a quick time out, come back, and continue to delve into PRUFOS, Police Reporting UFO Sightings Database, with Gary Heseltine, right here on Coast to Coast AM. Medieval manuscript fragments discovered in a set of 16th century books have revealed long-lost tales of Merlin the Magician. Merlin, of course, is one of the key characters in the legend of King Arthur, and experts say the manuscript fragments contain subtle differences to the traditional Arthurian narrative. The manuscripts were found in the archive of Bristol Central Library in the UK by Michael Richardson from the University of Bristol. Richardson was hunting for materials for students studying for an MA in medieval studies when he came across the remarkable fragments in the centuries-old books. And you can read more about the long-lost tales of Merlin and King Arthur in the news section, where Sean Lattersoor, our webmaster tonight, has posted that story up at coasttocoastam.com. George Norrie is back and better than ever, and you can join him on Saturday, March 23rd, 2019, as he returns to the beautiful, historic Everett Theater in Everett, Washington, for an amazing show with special guests, the director of the National UFO Reporting Center, Peter Davenport, esoteric researcher Johnny Enoch, afterlife expert and near-death experiencer Danyon Brinkley, and an expert on mysticism, prophecy, and the occult, rogue scholar John Hoag. There'll be a live band, audience participation, and of course, a meet and greet to follow. This is an event you don't want to miss. Get your tickets now. You can buy your tickets online. Go to coasttocoastam.com or call 425-258-6766. Again, 425-258-6766. George Norrie at the historic Everett Theater, Saturday, March the 23rd, 2019, from 5 to 8 p.m. Don't miss it. Back to more of my conversation with retired police detective Gary Heseltine, the editor of UFO Truth magazine. Back with more on Coast to Coast AM. We are back with Gary Heseltine, retired British police detective, the editor of UFO Truth magazine, and the founder of PRUFOS. It's Police Reporting UFO Sightings Database. And I'm wondering, Gary, is there any evidence or do you suspect that there is, in a police handbook, some sort of a protocol for how police are to handle UFO sightings?
I think the answer is yes and no, which makes it sound a bit strange. But historically, what used to happen is that if a member of the public rang into a police station and they were treated seriously by whoever police-wise took that call, then they were asked to complete a form that was then, in the days of old, telexed, faxed to the Ministry of Defence in London for them to decide whether they would do any follow-up inquiries, which was invariably no, they didn't. It was very much just a front desk. Probably a lot like Project Blue Book was really just a public office, so with one or two people in, and it was just a front for more serious investigations. Police forces in 2009, I alerted to the fact that the MOD had suddenly cancelled or closed its UFO reporting facility that had existed for over 50 years. And they closed it suddenly without any warning, saying that it was on the grounds of cost-cutting. But there was only one person in that office, and they saved 50-odd thousand pounds. But it was ironic, because in 2009, there was a big increase in sightings. And I think the real reason is that for a long time, the Ministry of Defence wanted to... They were getting bogged down in Freedom of Information Act requests on UFO material. And it went really against what the Freedom of Information Act was there for. They thought they were going to get requests about the Army, the Navy, etc., etc. But they were getting bogged down in a big increase in UFO-related material. So I think that's why they pulled the plug. I think what the costing excuse was just that, an excuse. So now, after 2009... there is no facility, no set procedure for police forces in the UK, as far as I'm aware, on what to do if a member of the public or indeed a police officer has a sighting, which is a pretty crazy situation. And when the MOD decided to pull the desk, I contacted every police force, and it got me into trouble because my own chief constable basically got wind, and I sent him a copy saying to all police forces, you must be aware of this because you are still going to get UFO reports from the public. Historically, most regional areas in Britain, which are called counties, get so many reports. That's not going to stop just because the Ministry of Defence have closed its desk. What are you going to do? And I got a really good response. Within 2 weeks, I was made the single point of contact for two of the counties. Another 24 said, thank you very much, we'll bring this up at our next strategy meetings. And then suddenly my chief constable instructed my chief superintendent to begin disciplinary proceedings against me for bringing the force into disrepute, just because I'd written a private letter clearly stating I was acting in a private capacity, that I had a database. Are you aware of this? And my force was well aware of my activity with the database from 2002. But nevertheless, you can't beat a big organisation. And I was subjected to a year investigation, of which I was ended up getting a written warning just because I wrote to the MOD. And that told me that the writing was on the wall, that if a big organisation wants to identify you as a problem, they can make life very difficult for you. And I'm sure people out there are nodding their heads, whether it be in the health service and things like that, fire service, things like this happen. You can't beat the big system. So in the end, I had to say, well, I didn't inform my chief constable that I was going to do this until I'd sent the letter to all to the Ministry of Defence and all the police forces. And so because of that, I was given a 12-month written warning. But during that year-long process, because it takes forever, my job was on the line for a time until they decided that that classification of misconduct wasn't going to be used. It was a level 2 misconduct, which means you couldn't get sacked. But I mean, all for writing a private letter. I could have imagined that if I'd chained myself naked to the railings outside the Houses of Parliament, shouting on me to the UFOs are real and ET is here, then they would have had grounds to do that. But that's all I did, write a letter to all the different regional county police forces saying that I was off duty, I had a database, and I want to just let you know that you're going to have to make provisions for people when they contact you. But that's the story, and that was one of the reasons why I decided to leave early, because I thought that if they want to create a problem, they will find a way to do so.
Are there close encounter reports on the database where a police officer has been, not just a sighting, but I don't know, an abduction or some sort of contact?
There are only a couple, but there is one very famous case. And it is that of Alan Godfrey, who was a West Yorkshire police officer for around 10 years, had to retire on ill health. But basically, he had a sighting in 1980, in November 1980, just a month before the Rendlesham incident. And he had that. Now, it's regarded as Britain's first documented abduction case. So it's got a place in history. And basically, cutting a long story short, he was driving his police car early hours of the morning in a town called Todmorden, and basically he saw a UFO blocking the road. It was literally filling the road. He couldn't drive past, so he had to stop. He stopped within 30 metres or so of this object that was spinning. It had like it was like kind of diamond shaped, the bottom half was rotating anti-clockwise. And cutting a long story short, he had some missing time. Well, this is 1980. This is just at the advent of communion, well before the X-Files, and in a very different world from what we now face, where people are well accustomed to the stories of alien abduction. This was a classic case of missing time. He found himself being engulfed in white light. He found himself in some kind of a room with small creatures, objects, putting some equipment on his legs. He was laid down on some kind of a bed, and they were putting equipment on his legs, and he described them, bear in mind this is 1980, as lamp heads, bulb heads with big eyes, which is now what we would associate with small greys, etc., etc. He was later hypnotized by two professors at Manchester University, and there were four sessions set every 3 months over a year period. Three of those were video recorded. The videos have never been released in full, although I have seen them, and they're amazing. And if he's lying, he deserves an Oscar. I don't think he's lying at all, and it's a very, very famous case, and like I say, historically Britain's first recorded, well-recorded abduction event. And he was a uniformed police officer, and when he went public, which he never really meant to do, but the press got hold of it, and one thing escalated, and suddenly he found himself in the spotlight, as it were, and he was being interviewed by film crews all over the world. It had a very negative effect on his life, cost him his marriage, drove him to drink, drove him at one point to the brink of suicide because his family were being ridiculed, his children were being ridiculed. And probably if you asked him now, and he became a good friend when I researched his story for 18 months, if you asked him now, you probably wished that it had not happened because, very few people are expected to deal with something in the glare of the world media spotlight. And it had probably a lot of negative connotations for Alan.
Do British police cars, are they required to have dashboard cameras on board?
Only the traffic cars, although it is changing now. Bear in mind I left in 2013, but what you do see now, and I've got several friends that are still serving, they now regularly wear head cams, which is new technology coming in, usually on head cams or shoulder cams. And so I think the days of being alone and not being filmed, as it were, in a scene, now make it that if you had a UFO experience now, providing the camera's on, and I don't know what the legal ruling is, whether it has to be on or whether they just activate it when they choose to, but if it was on, certainly now, most cars and most officers would be in a position to record what was going on, which is obviously beneficial to any kind of incident, UFO or crime-wise.
And are you aware of any such video footage, a dashboard or head camera footage existing of UFOs?
Yes, I have there is a video that I'm aware of, I think from 2003, that a North Yorkshire police officer posted from a traffic car. Now, traffic car are those that patrol the roads and stop people for speeding and dangerous driving, those kind of things. And there is a great little piece of footage. The footage itself is not great. It shows the police car with a forward-facing camera. He goes around the corner in a rural location, and on a hillside he sees what looks on camera is just a single bright white light that's flickering there. This is daylight. He slows down, and then the object suddenly just fades away and disappears. But the actual officer, in his accurate statement, said it wasn't one light. That's just the way the camera took it because the quality of the camera. He said it was a collection of small white spheres, which people often see, clusters of white spheres that came together on a hillside. So a completely different thing. But what we do have is a very good case. It's a recent case from 2016 that I've researched from an area called St Athan in South Wales. And basically that was the police helicopter up when they had their FLIR camera, the forward infrared camera, looking forward, and they capture an object moving against the wind that is not anything like a plane in outline. There are no warning lights or anything, no transponders. And they record this for about 8 minutes, and I chase up on this footage. And it's very good footage, but the police have clamped down. I've done Freedom of Information Act. I know who the police spotted who was on board, but they've denied me access to the officer interviewing him. They tried to obstruct me along the way. They did give me a video, but without any kind of tracking information. It's all been blocked off. However, I have some contact to a former police helicopter spotters, and they were able to retrieve data to show exactly where it was, plot maps, things like that. And it's a very good piece of footage. It did attract a lot of national media at the time, national newspapers. There's been several stories that I've put out relating to that. I think the FLIR cameras that the police in the United States, I'm aware of some FLIR footage taken by American police officers. There are many cases now where FLIR is picking up. If you think of the Campeche 2004 Mexico sightings, where there's that great piece of footage of 11 or 12 objects moving through cloud, etc. That's what FLIR looks like. It's in black and white and it's infrared. And I certainly believe that in the infrared sphere of vision, there are objects flying around that that defy our natural explanation.
We're heading into a break here shortly. When we come back, I want to get into your new documentary.
Excellent.
But just a very quick question. Are any thoughts to expanding the database to include North America, continental Europe?
People have asked me that in the past, and I've been writing the police book about the sightings for about 2 years, but I've had to put it on the back burner, 60% done, because of the development of the Reynoldsham documentary, Purple Green, which life gets in the way sometimes. So that will get done, and it will contain a chapter about worldwide sightings of police officers. With them doing the magazine, there's no time to do that, realistically.
And to your knowledge, are there other databases around the world focusing exclusively on British eyewitness sightings?
I am aware of a website in the United States, Canada, I think, record some sightings, but not as per country. They just collect a lot of my reports, put them on there from America, from Brazil, any country where there's been a police sighting, but nothing specifically like mine. It could be replicated anywhere, the Proof Force Police Database.
All right, when we come back, we will talk about Capel Green, which is really, in large measure, the Larry Warren story. And Gary Heseltine, retired British police detective, the editor of UFO Truth magazine, is with us. We'll also open up the phone lines and take questions and comments.